Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk.
Street Talk.
Mike Graham.
Fighting the good fight with all his might, providing a welcome dose of common sense for the common people.
Solid Talk.
Hot Talk.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On the app, on your smart speaker, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is, of course, Talk TV. It is the home of common sense. It is the one place to be at 10 o'clock every day from Monday to Friday, following from Julie Hartley Brewer and an amazing show that she put on for us today, starting off with, of course, the day after the night before. We will have spent basically 12 days of mourning, making sure that the country had a kind of calm blanket placed over it, making sure that everybody was able to see something of the Queen's funeral, that people were able to go and pay tribute to the Queen lying in state in Westminster Hall, talking endlessly about the royal family, talking forever about what it means for the country. Today we're going to take a little slightly different route around that particular subject, because we're going to kick off with Frank Ferrady, who's a writer, professor, sociologist, of course. I'm going to be asking him, where do we go now? Because yesterday, when I was on Vanessa Feltz's show, we talked a little bit about why this was needed in this country. We needed to kind of put arms around each other. We needed to stand collectively and grieve. We needed to somehow come to terms with the fact that the woman who has been such a steadfast kind of influence on the country for the past 70 years is no longer going to be there, that we now replace her with somebody slightly more tetchy, somebody slightly more authoritarian, perhaps somebody slightly less able and nimble with other people. Somebody who has so far surprised us, but who might surprise us even more in the future with slightly less pleasant remuneration. But shall we say this? Here we are. It's 2022. We're coming towards the end of September. It's the 20th of September today. And you wonder, do you not, what the future will hold? Because we've still got problems that we need to solve. We've still got issues that have yet to be sorted out. Liz Truss, the Prime Minister, has gone to New York to talk to the United Nations. I'm not sure why. She might talk to Joe Biden. I'm also not sure why. She should really be here. She should be talking here about what she's going to do to help people to get through the winter. We know that there's some money on the way in October. What we don't know is exactly how they're going to deal with businesses that might be faltering, how they're going to deal with inflation, how they're going to deal with some of the other rather pockets, shall we say, of mistrust and unhappiness. We're going to talk about Leicester, a place which seems to be at the moment absolutely aflame because people from two rival religions seem to be having fights with each other on a nightly basis and have been for the last couple of weeks. It's all a bit weird. Hindus versus Muslims in Leicester seems a bit strange. We'll find out what that's all about. We'll also, of course, talk about King Charles III and what he's going to do. They're in a period of mourning now for a while. We'll get to that. We'll also talk as well about the railways, because of course yesterday lots of people wanted to go to Windsor. And where did you go to Windsor from? Paddington Station. Paddington, of course, a big figure because of the Queen's little video at Christmas and the marmalade sandwiches. Well, unfortunately for Paddington Bear, if he had come in from Peru into Heathrow, he wouldn't have been able to get on the Heathrow Express into Paddington. Why? Because there were no trains. Why? Because there were no overhead wires. Why? Because we've been racing to net zero so fast that we've done away with diesel trains. But guess what? The only trains that actually ran were diesel trains. That's right. Anyway, we will continue as we started. We mean to go on. We mean to go on with you as well. We want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000. Are we actually genuinely in a new era? Can we be better? Talk to me. This is Talk TV. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is the home of common sense. It is the one place where you find the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You might have noticed I'm not wearing a black tie. I'm not wearing a black jacket. I found it enough to put it in the cleaners. So we move on out of mourning and now into something else. But what is that something else? Let's talk to Frank Ferrady, sociologist, professor, good friend of Talk TV. Frank, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. So the eternal question, I suppose, for guys like yourself, sociologists, people who study the way we are, where do we go from here would be the first question, I guess.
Well, you know, the interesting thing that has occurred over the last 10, 11 days, is that for the first time, a lot of people began to have a sense of belonging to a community, of belonging to a nation. A lot of people felt reassured that actually they are British, and being British is not something that you should be ashamed of. Mm. And there was a lot of sense of identification. I mean, if you watch the queues and you talk to people in the queues, it was almost like it was an experiment in creating a new community, somehow coming together without anybody pressurizing you, without anybody forcing you to do that. And I think what it really demonstrated is that there is, within our society, a real desire to somehow find some kind of greater meaning in our lives than we've been allowed to in recent weeks and years, recent years. And that to me was a really positive development. So when I look at the future, the question that I want to sort of struggle with and find a solution to is, to what extent can we retain that sensibility that we saw? To what extent it is possible for people in this country to maintain an element of continuity with what has gone on in the past? Mm. Or is it simply the case that this was a one-off episode and now we're back to this murky world of confusion? The answer, I suppose, is really in our hands. It depends upon us to what extent we kind of commit, we try to sort of build a different world. Because you have to remember that while people were queuing up and paying their respect, there were people rioting in Leicester. So you had these two dramas running side by side. Disunity, profound sense of disunity within the nation on the one hand, whilst at the same time a real yearning to be together, to be at one with each other. And it seems to me that our politicians and our public figures have got to find a way of creating a stronger sense of common purpose and common ground than is the case at the moment. And it, to some extent, our politics has got to address this need on the part of people, not just for more money in their pockets, but also some kind of a moral purpose, a moral sensibility, which we all need if we're going to have the confidence that can deal with the big problems that lie ahead. Yeah.
And how much of what happened over the last 10 to 12 days, Frank, do you think was the product of what had happened before in the previous 2 years, where people were kind of slightly lost? They'd become perhaps more dependent on the state than they wanted to be, but they couldn't really do much about that. They were looking to the state for kind of instruction on many things, which previously they wouldn't have asked for. I wonder whether they kind of needed something to all cling on to and almost end that period, which is why when I say, are we actually genuinely entering a new era? Maybe we are.
Well, you know, it's not just the last 2 years. I think it's a bit longer than that. A lot of people have felt silenced and felt that they couldn't really express what's inside of them. Mm. People were struggling to say that, and they felt that if they opened their mouth and really tried to indicate who they were, they would be slapped down, or people would be making fun of them. People would kind of call them old-fashioned traditionalists. How can you take these kinds of institutions, these symbols, these religious rites seriously? And all of a sudden, they were given permission to be who they felt they were and to express that in a kind of confident kind of a way. And I think that was really quite important, particularly after the pandemic experience, when they were really closed off and isolated and fragmented. So to me, this was like very much about community creation, community continuity, than just simply about a funeral of a great monarch.
Yes, I think so. But it also centred us as well, I think, perhaps, even those people who are still knocking around saying we want republicanism, we don't want a queen, we don't want to have a monarch, and we don't have to have a head of state that's unelected. I think an awful lot of people, a little bit like the church sometimes is a is a kind of a, I don't know, some kind of truth to people who are not particularly religious, they can hold on to it and go, well, it's a steadying force. I think the monarchy and certainly the last 10 days have been a steadying force, even for people who don't really believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people don't believe in the royal family or monarchy. They can see that perhaps a lot of money is being spent in unnecessary rituals. Some of the individuals in the royal family are not exactly role models for anybody. But nevertheless, what they then see is that there's a kind of continuity with the past that people need. They need a kind of memory about what they really are about. Mm. Suddenly, in a kind of a moment, you know, sort of like in a flash, there's a kind of realization that there is something more to their lives than just their day-to-day existence, something more that gives them a kind of strength, an unexpected strength to face their everyday predicament. And I think that that's really what came out very, very strongly for literally millions of people.
Mm. So as people go back to work today, because plenty of people didn't work yesterday and probably for the previous few days before that, what's different? Is it what we make it, or is it what is there?
I think the first reaction will be is that it feels very different. Somehow today feels very different to yesterday. It isn't just simply the fact that we had a long weekend, but the fact that something that was there in the air has just gone. You know, it's no longer there. So you feel very, very different. And then I think, you know, some of us will be saying, well, yes, it's not like it was, but what can we do? What can we actually achieve and construct that will make our lives a much more sort of kind of community-oriented oriented one? Can we build some kind of a bridge between what has occurred and our lives in the future? And I think that that is a challenge that you have, I have, a lot of us have, because if we can somehow remind ourselves not to lose the memory of the last 10 days, but to let it inspire us in the days ahead, you know, some very positive things can be created. But if on the other hand we go to sleep and pretend that this was just a television show and nothing more, then of course life will go on as before. Mm. So we have this incredible challenge to confront.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it had just been on TV, I might have said, well, maybe that was just on TV. But it was the fact that so many people went out to show their respect or to be part of it, either in Windsor or in Edinburgh or in Balmoral or in London, you know, Sandringham as well. You know, there was an awful big outpouring of love, if you like, for want of a better word. You know, it was almost like the 60s again. People were kind of, you know, absolutely wanting to be a part of something that they really identified with, it seemed to me, as British people, you know. And that's what I find fascinating. But stay with us, Frank. We've got to take a little break. We'll talk some more about what's going on in Leicester. We'll talk some more as well about what Liz Truss is doing over in New York. We're with Frank Ferrady, writer, sociologist, professor. Call us as well. We want your views. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk TV.
The home of common sense. Talk radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Got this from Patricia. What qualities do I think we need for the new age? Kindness. It's the most underrated of virtues. The vitriol that fills the internet appalls me. If we approach each day with kindness, our lives would be so much richer. Well, kindness, I think, is probably a good place to start. Frank, have we become less kind as a nation? We were talking yesterday about how the Queen's kind of generation of people were more likely to put up with things, were more likely to see you know, being selfless and service is very much a way to live. I think in our modern culture, we've become slightly more selfish, if you like, and we are now more, sort of more used to doing whatever we want to do as opposed to doing things on behalf of other people or because other people want us to do them. We're talking to Frank Ferrady, writer and sociologist. Do you think we've become less kind?
Well, you know, if you become self-obsessed and if the entire world is really you and what's inside of you, then it's very difficult to be sensitive to the needs of other people. And kindness becomes something that you do for yourself. And you often see these advertisements, which basically says, relax, be nice to yourself. And somehow you become the object of the this kind of affection and emotion. And it seems to me that what has happened is that we find it more difficult to express our desire to be kind to other people. I think we still want to be kind to other people. We haven't become so kind of coarse in our world, but we find it very difficult to find a language through which we express that kindness. And of course, there are very kind people as well, but it's the self-obsession that exists in our society we've got to worry about.
I think there's no doubt we're more narcissistic now, perhaps, than at any time in our history, right?
It's true. It's this me too, it's me kind of culture. You particularly get that if you talk to students, as I do sometimes, where literally the world is just them. And when I talk to them, I'm kind of intruding somehow. I feel I'm intruding into their world.
Yes.
Because I don't validate what they are saying.
And they don't like that, do they? They don't wish, you know, we were listening to Julia Hartley Brewer there interviewing Alex Epstein, who is very firmly on the side of those who are opposed to net zero as an end in itself and even a means to an end. But people don't like to hear from people that they don't agree with anymore, which I find extraordinary. And so and Julia said this herself, you know, we're going to try here at Talk TV to stimulate debate, to get people to talk to each other, to find out what somebody else thinks, because how else are you going to learn anything?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. We learn when we have to defend our views, when we have to argue for what we believe in. It's through debate and argument that we gain clarity and really kind of come to grips with our own ideas.
Yes.
Actually, I've learned from people who I disagree with on most points, but they have an insight about something that I never thought about. And if I'm not exposed to those opposite ideals, then my learning process becomes very much compromised.
Yes, I think that's right. So maybe if we've only learned that in the past 12 days, then perhaps that will be something we can move forward with. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Leicester, though, Frank. I don't know how much you know about what's been going on up there. Friends of mine in the communities that I know, not in Leicester necessarily, but elsewhere, in what you might call the Hindu and Muslim communities, are saying, look, people have been living in Leicester side by side for a very long time. This has nothing to do with immigration as such. It's more to do with what you might call the rampant sort of politicisation, if you like, of sport, the hatred that's fueled these young men from perhaps India and Pakistan. There's a rise in Hindu nationalism. There's a rise in Muslim extremism. Is it that?
I think there's a lot of misinformation. The way that I look at it is that, in the first instance, the problem is the fact that multiculturalism isn't working in the way that it should.
Yeah.
And under the surface in Leicester, for a very long time, there have been a lot of tensions that are quite independent of anything that has occurred the last few weeks. The idea that somehow it was a very harmonious community, which is what the mayor says, is a bit delusional. You know, if you've been up to Leicester and you've talked to people in the communities, you realize that suspicion was fairly evident all along for many, many years. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that the authorities are reluctant to address the fact that the problem is within Leicester itself. So there are all these fantasy stories about outsiders coming in that somehow they kind of deflect the criticism by talking about these people kind of arriving in Leicester. Or alternatively, they blame the social media rather than what's happening in Leicester itself.
Yes.
I think that's very dishonest. And the second thing, I think there's a kind of double standard that's kind of brewing up, whereby it's very fashionable to blame Hindu fascism. But if you ever talked about Islamic fascism, you would be kind of denounced as Islamophobic. Mm. And I think there's been a tendency to, in a one-sided way, to only see one side of the story and not understand that all this talk about extreme Hindus, Hindu nationalism, deflects from the fact that there is a kind of intercommunal tension where the blame essentially is to be equally shared by both sides.
But why now, though? Why did it not happen 10 years ago when there were just as many Hindus and Muslims living in Leicester?
Well, you know, there's always been tensions on a smaller scale. I mean, that this is not something new. I think that occasionally what happens is that, you know, for a variety of causes, you have the cricket match, you have people getting quite excited about things. I think that you have a situation where, by and large, identity politics has become far more politicized in recent years than ever before. And when the whole nation's attention is taken off what's going on the streets because everybody's fixed on something else, all of a sudden, these things become crystallized, and in the most unexpected place, at the most unexpected time, they blow up. I would imagine there is going to be a lot more of these kind of conflicts, not just in Leicester, but in Birmingham and many, many other places, just because those kind of politicized forms of identity tensions are very deeply ingrained. Mm.
And as long as the political class and some in the media refuse to acknowledge that it's even going on, or that everything, as you say, is rosy in the garden and, you know, multiculturalism is brilliant, it's like all the people that keep continually pumping it down our throats that all immigration is great when it very clearly isn't.
Well, you see, the thing is that when the riots began, the BBC actually pretended that this was a riot between young people, and you'd be hard pushed to know that the people that were rioting, you know, belonged to two different ethnic groups, because they refused to mention the fact that the people that were involved were Hindus and Muslims. And it's really not a reflection on the two communities, because you know, they're two wonderful communities. But if you're going to ignore a very pertinent fact and pretend that what's going on is just a bunch of young people fighting each other, then what you're doing is, in a very dishonest way, implying that multiculturalism is working, it's terrific, it's really good, and not really addressing the fact there's a real deep-seated problem that we need to tackle.
Yeah. It's similar to the people who say that the dinghies, which came across every single day, by the way, notwithstanding the period of mourning, they didn't actually have a period of mourning in the Albanian people smuggling racket. So, you know, it's a bit like saying that's all fine because we need people to come here as immigrants to work. Well, we don't need people to come here to run drug gangs. Thanks very much.
Well, I know this is very disingenuous that somehow illegal immigration and human trafficking becomes normalized, because it becomes a medium for getting workers to work on English farms. I think that this kind of dishonesty that is so prevalent when it comes to some very controversial issues has got to be tackled, because unless we have clarity, unless people know what the problem is, they're always going to, you know, sort of be confused and disoriented. And I think it's one of the things that you can do on Talk TV is to hit the nail on the head and actually tell it like it is. Mm.
And that's what we do. Great to talk to you, Frank. Thank you very much indeed. Frank Ferrady, writer and sociologist. We tell it like it is. It is Talk TV. It's the only place to be.
On DAB+, on the app, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Lots of you are sending in some very, very interesting tweets and texts as well. Of course, 87222. We'll be crossing live to Paddington Station a little bit later on, where a lot of people wanted to go to Windsor from yesterday, but couldn't because the trains weren't working. They weren't working last night. They weren't working this morning. I don't know whether they're going to be working this afternoon. We'll keep you updated. We will talk to Simon Calder, who's live in Paddington Station for us. Sarah says this: Mike, leave King Charles alone, I think you might want to say, rather than a chance, or give King Charles a chance. Sick of media already asking such questions. He is in mourning and exhausted. Give the man a break. I'm not asking any particular questions. I'm just saying that, you know, coming out of the period of mourning, he might still be in mourning, but for those of the rest of us are not in mourning, we are now all back at work. We're all talking about other things. We're talking about the future. And therefore, I'm afraid if you are the monarch of this nation, whether you're in mourning or not, things will be discussed about the future and about where the direction is in which we head. And so in order to help us do that, let's talk to Elizabeth Norton, royal historian and author, because it is the day after the final day, the final farewell, as one of the papers had it this morning. It feels like it was quite a long farewell. I said yesterday that originally I thought perhaps 10 or 12 days was a bit long. Actually, I think it was just about right. And I think we're now over it, we're now through it, and we're out the other side. And I'm afraid for those people who think we should leave the royal family alone now, well, no, because that's their job. Let's talk to Elizabeth and see what she thinks. Elizabeth, very good morning to you.
Hello, good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. I went to look on your Twitter to see what you were saying about everything after the day of mourning yesterday, the funeral and the magnificence of all of the pageantry and all of that. And I found some very interesting and amazing tweets about various different doors and bits of history and things which actually are far more interesting than what we're about to talk about. But that's another story. I've been asking the question today whether we are now in a new era, whether it's, you know, an actual new era or just an imaginary one. What do you think?
So I think It is a new era. I mean, traditionally, of course, we tend to define eras by the name of the monarch. So we have the Elizabethans, the first Elizabethans, of course, the Victorians, followed by the Edwardians. So I think we are in a new era. 70 years of the new Elizabethan period, and we're now into Charles's period. And it does feel like the end of an era. And I think that's the way I've been characterizing the Queen. And I've left my Twitter fairly blank this morning on the Queen, because I felt like I needed some time to process as well what has gone on in the whirlwind of the past 10 days. But I think we are in a new era, and it is possible that the new king will define his own era. Certainly Queen Victoria's son, Edward VII, Edwardian age, he does define his own era. So I think it's possible that King Charles will be able to do it, but I think it does remain to be seen.
Yeah, and if you were with your historian's hat on, going to sort of define the Elizabethan era, the modern one, the one that existed for the last 70 years, how would that be characterised? Because it was sort of, I guess, from the Second World War to yesterday, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, at its most basic level, it's a period of change. If you had to sum it up with one word, it would be change. But I think 70 years it's a difficult period to roll into a definition. I mean, when we think about the Victorians, we think about industrial progress. We think about the empire, rightly or wrongly. And I think the new Elizabethan age that we've just gone through, I think it is about going from World War II, the Second World War, austerity, into the modern age, the internet, streaming on television.
Yeah.
And also the post-imperial age. And I think that's really important to bring up, is that, you know, when the Queen became the Queen, the British Empire still existed.
Yes.
And now, of course, it doesn't. And actually, the way that she helped negotiate the end of empire, I think, was really, really important, particularly with the Commonwealth. So perhaps we define it as the Commonwealth, Britain sort of creating its relationships on a world stage in a post-imperial age.
Yeah, because if you think of what, I guess, King Charles has inherited in terms of the society in which we now live, I mean, it couldn't be more different, really, could it, from what happened in 1952?
It's like a different world.
Yeah.
We look at the pictures of the Queen's accession, and it is fundamentally very, very different. It's 70 years, it's a long time, but actually I think there are a few periods in history that have changed quite so much in 70 years. It looks completely alien, very, very different. And I think we can see that actually just by making a comparison between the funeral yesterday and, of course, the funeral of George VI.
Mm.
It was televised. Everyone in the world could watch almost all of the Queen's funeral. And that is something that we didn't see back in the 50s. In fact, there was a huge amount of opposition to actually filming the coronation ceremony for the Queen in 1953. Undoubtedly, King Charles's coronation will be televised.
Yes, incredibly. You would be amazed if it wasn't. But I wonder as well whether that will have the sort of viewership that we saw yesterday, because he's not her in the end, you know, and she was a magnificently brilliant individual, whatever anybody says about the monarchy. You know, she was clearly a very, important character in the history of the world.
Yeah, I mean, she was undoubtedly the most famous person on the planet before her death. I really don't think that's an exaggeration. King Charles does not have that instant recognition. He has had a very long apprenticeship. He's been taught by the Queen, so he's been taught by the best, if you like. So I'm hopeful, but he has not always been one of the most popular members of the family. I think quite often he's been quite low down the popularity rankings. There have been a couple of wobbles in the mourning period, particularly involving pens, which is slightly worrying. But I think, you know, we can assume that he is mourning, of course, you know, and trying to find his feet. But I do think he is going to struggle to establish himself on the world stage in the way that his mother did. And I think perhaps it's an unfair ask of him in that she had 70 years. He is not going to have 70 years, of course. And I think he just doesn't share her star quality. And I think that's really the fundamental thing with the Queen.
Yes. And I'm not sure anybody does, to be honest. I mean, I don't know if anybody could do what she did over the years, and all of the people that she dealt with, and all of the sort of the despots that she met and somehow managed to be exactly the same with as if they were children. I mean, it's just incredible. But yeah, I mean, I think he's going to struggle to define what his sort of reign will be, because he is very much seen as sort of holding the fort, isn't he, until William gets it.
He is. And I think there is hope for him. I think, you know, if he works out what his role is and how he is going to present himself, I think he can define his own era, albeit it's going to be a lot shorter than 70 years. I mean, King Charles is 73 years old. So I don't think he needs to be a placeholder monarch, but I think there is a danger that he will become one in as people look towards the future with William, the new Prince of Wales. But I'm hopeful that he will find his place, and he certainly has learned from his mother. He's learned from the best. So I mean, I'm hopeful for him, but I think we will see in the next few months.
And just finally, the period of mourning that they do now privately, how long has that gone for?
So they will disappear now for the week. Right. So we won't see anything of the royal family. I suspect Harry and Meghan may well fly home during this period, but in general, we won't see the royal family for a week.
Very much like the civil service working from home then.
Yes. I mean, I suspect that the business won't stop. I don't know, possibly.
No, quite. Elizabeth, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Elizabeth Norton, royal historian and author. Check out her Twitter, because there's some amazing stuff on there about actually the rich and incredible history of this country in terms of things which appear not to be that well known, and certainly not to me. Anyway, lots more to do, of course. We'll take some calls because we need to hear from you. This is the one place where we care what you think, and we let you say it as well. 0344 499 1000. It's the home of free speech. It is, of course, the home of common sense. It's the one place to be. It is Talk TV.
The home of common sense. Talk radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. We are, of course, back to normal now. The mourning period is over. The royal family is still in mourning, and that's entirely as it should be. But I've got a few texts and tweets to read out to you. How about this one? Instead of flying around the world and feeding her ego to be a world leader, as Boris did, why doesn't she, and I mean Liz Truss, obviously, stay grounded and solve our major problems? She has created friction with Russia, China and Europe, which isolates the UK. Now it seems we have no trade deal with the USA, which makes our long-term friendship somewhat frosty. I feel global UK relations trouble lies ahead, says Ian. I wouldn't agree with that, actually. You know, I think the whole point about Liz Truss is that she has only literally just got the job. She's got plenty to do. Molly says this, raising a good point on Talk TV, says Mike Graham, why is Truss swanning off to the US on her first working day in office, terribly judged? I mean, I don't think she needs to be there, is my point. I'm not quite sure what she is going to achieve, but I don't think if you're going to not going to trade deal with the US, if you're not going to be able to sort anything out at home, then you need to be at home to sort it out. Why do you give so much cash to protect Ukraine's border, says Rick, but not our own? Pretty sure with that much cash I could design and produce a safe, effective floating border for where our territorial waters begin. Well, that's not a bad thought either. And of course, lots of you also responding to what Mary said. Mark from Sunbury, your guest thinks Putin should have been invited to the Queen's funeral. Has his military blows the arms and legs off of Ukrainian children? Revolting, pompous, middle-class arrogance. Well, I don't think she was actually saying that, Mark. Mary was simply saying that an extended interview should have been given to Russia since it was given to China. Lots of people disagree with that. And I'm not sure that I would agree with Mary in that. But she said that in diplomatic circles, you have a kind of agreement that you extend an invitation to somebody who then doesn't take it up. So they have discretion not to take it up, as in fact Saudi Arabia did. They didn't send Mohammed bin Salman. They sent somebody else. Anyway, let's talk to Lee Anderson, a man for whom diplomacy is a dirty word. Conservative MP for Ashfield. Lee, very good morning to you.
Morning, Michael. Diplomacy is my middle name, as you well know.
Exactly right. Yeah, but, you know, it's not. Oh, you wouldn't call it soft diplomacy, I don't think, the sort of stuff that you practice, Lee. What have you made of the last few days? It's been an incredible period. I've said that it's given us all a reminder of what it means to be British. It gives us all a reminder of what's good about this country. I'm sick to death of people talking it down, sick to death of people saying how it's all going down the swanny. I think we're a great country, and I think this weekend proved it.
Well, I'm on the same page as you on this one, Michael. Last week I was in London. I was fortunate enough to walk past the Queen's coffin and pay my last respects. I was there on Whitehall when the funeral procession came by. Look, you know, we've all been glued to our television screens over the weekend. We've all been involved. And you're quite right, Michael. Nobody does it better than us. Mm. We are a great nation. The Queen has served us well for 70 years over 70 years. I'm incredibly proud to be British. I'm fortunate enough to have been born in this great country of ours. And I remind myself every single day that I'm a proud Englishman, just fortunate to be born here, and incredibly proud of our culture, our traditions and our history. And I think it's just served as a little reminder of the weekend what a fantastic and brilliant country we still are.
Absolutely right. Liz Truss is off in the US at the UN. Some people say she should be back here sorting out our problems. What do you think?
Well, I think Liz has put together a really good cabinet. You know, I'm pleased with some of the appointments in there. You know, a prime minister's job is to lead, obviously. We've got to lead on a world stage as well, Michael. And we've also got to put the right people in place in this country. I think we've got the right people. We've already seen it. She hit the ground running, I think, with the announcements on the energy crisis. Mm. You know, she said some encouraging things about fracking, which, you know, I'm a supporter of fracking if it's safe and if it's cheaper. Mm. So, look, you know, leaders have to lead. They have to lead on the world stage as well. I think, you know, the country has come together a little bit over the past 2 weeks as well. With the passing of our Lady yeah. Queen. So let's hope we can move forward and shut the opposition up, shut the mainstream media up, and get this country back on its feet.
Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed, to be fair, that she's not coming back for Prime Minister's questions. I was looking forward to her giving old Keir Starmer another going over. But that will have to be done by, I presume, Therese Coffey on Wednesday, will it?
Well, I don't think there is a PMQs this week, Mike. We're not back till Thursday, so there's not a PMQs on Wednesday, as I believe.
Oh, OK. Well, you may well be right. My information could be duff, as it's come from somebody who's only about 21 and a half.
You're probably getting your information from the BBC.
No, I'm getting it from my producer, who's getting worse rather than better.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He's had a day off, you see. We should never give him days off because then they just forget what they're supposed to
do. Yeah. He's just got one job, hasn't he? And he's failed on that.
He's failed, yeah. Hopefully. Gave him a bottle of scotch this morning as well. It's ridiculous. But anyway, let's talk about the way forward, because when she is back, she's got plenty to get on with. One of the things that a lot of people are asking me about, and I know it sounds like a sort of niche subject, is she sorted out the electricity problem. She's told us what we're going to be getting, so the bills are not going to be out of order. But for some people who get oil delivered to their houses because they live in the country, or because they don't, you know, have regular electric supply, or they don't use gas, you know, that seems to have fallen through the cracks at the moment. Do you know if there's a plan to sort that out?
Yeah, I mean, my parents fall into that category, Mark, and many people do it in a coalfield area. Mm. Who's gone from coal, couldn't get gas supply, so right. They've gone on oil. So I believe that is something that is being looked at, because it affects thousands and thousands of people across the country. And it's only right, it's only fair, that, you know, because the oil prices for, you know, for oil central heating, that's gone through the roof, yeah. Like gas has. So, yeah, I believe it is being looked at.
Yeah, good. And the mini budget coming on Friday, we understand, if that's the right information, is it?
Well, yeah, there's going to be a statement, I believe, this Friday. Look, it's important. We've got a new prime minister, a new government. We need a new focus and possibly a new direction. Look, we've been giving money away, a lot of money away, Michael, in this country of ours, billions and billions of pounds. It's not just about throwing money at everything. We need a proper... I'll tell you what we do need. I want to see a proper energy policy in this country, Mike, moving forward. I think, you know, I've said it before on your show that we've sort of sleepwalked into this energy crisis. We've been far too nice to other countries in buying foreign fuel. Look, we've got gas, we've got oil, we've got coal in this country. It's absolutely madness that we're not using all our resources while we transition to net zero by 2050. Let's get the coal out, let's get the oil and gas out of the ground. Let's be sensible, have a sensible energy policy. Let's create thousands of jobs. That in turn creates thousands and millions of pounds in revenue for the Treasury. It has to be the sensible and right way forward.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. What about the situation with our borders? A lot of people saying, you know, it's all very well giving a couple of billion quid to Ukraine to protect their borders. What about our borders? You know, can we not protect them with that kind of money?
Well, look, Michael, you know my position on this, the illegal crossings. I'm absolutely sick to the back teeth of this. I did raise it after I spoke to you a few weeks ago on this channel in the House of Commons to the previous Home Secretary. I'm fed up to the back teeth of it. Look, my solution is simple. I'm not in government, but if I was, I'd just put them on a boat and send them straight back. And if it means a standoff with France, then so be it. I think the country as a whole would get behind a government that took that sort of stance. But we don't do that. You know, we're British. We try and do things the right way, obey the rules. But I think, you know, this current crisis, £5-6 million a day, is costing to house these illegals. And let's be honest, Mike, they're not genuine asylum seekers. No. The chances, the economic migrants, you know, whatever they are, they need sending straight back.
Yeah, and regardless of whether Joe Biden likes it or not, we've got to get Northern Ireland sorted out, haven't we?
We have got to get Northern Ireland. We, you know, we seem to sometimes forget a little bit in this country. I think we're all guilty of it. That, you know, Northern Ireland is part of this great country of ours. You know, they're probably more patriotic, Mike, the Irish, the Northern Irish, than a lot of people on mainland Britain. So, yeah, you know, I don't take much notice of Biden, to be honest. You know, I'm more interested in what our own government's got to say, and whatever decisions we make and whatever direction we're travelling, you know, the people of Northern Ireland have got to be at the top of that list.
Yeah, absolutely right. Lee, good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. We'll see you when you're back on Thursday. Lee Anderson, Conservative MP for Ashfield. So no Prime Minister's questions this week. Back on Thursday into Parliament. Liz Truss back from New York, of course. The mini budget will come on Friday. We'll bring you all of that right here on Talk TV because it is the only place to be. A lot of you are getting quite worked up about Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby. Carol in Kent says, Mike, it was a total cop-out, Holly and Phil on this morning. Thought they'd play the We Are Journalist card, but being near the Abbey for 5 minutes is not exactly journalism. They're both lightweight nobodies who jump any cues.com. Hope they both go. There's a lot of quite strong feeling about all of this, you know. ITV could have a problem here. We shall see. We'll look into this story for you and we'll take calls on it perhaps as well. 0344 499 1000. A lot of people felt very strongly about the fact that some journalists and some MPs, I mean, I'm less worried about an MP, but more worried about an MP's entourage, if you like. If an MP wants to go in his place of work or her place of work to have a look, it wasn't interfering with people walking past who had been queuing for hours and hours and hours. But if it's good enough for David Beckham, I'd say it's good enough for Holly and Phil. And what they shouldn't have done was pretend that they were making a movie or some kind of filming some kind of news item, because they clearly weren't. This is Talk TV.
Talk radio.
Danger. Slippery people.
Uncomplicated life rubric for hungry thought thinkers. It's Talk Radio.
The home of common sense.
On your mobile, on your wavelength. Talk radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Bill from Wales says, Mike, I think Liz Truss has done a clever move over the trade deal with the US. Biden was using it to bully us and ensure we were trapped into the EU. We know Trump is going to win in 2024 and we can get a free trade deal then. I understand it doesn't make too much of a difference as we do a lot of trade with the US anyway. Well, I mean, a lot of trade deal nonsense is spoken, I have to be said, particularly by people who think that, oh, we won't be able to do any trade deals with anybody and we won't be able to do a trade deal with the EU. You don't need a trade deal to actually trade. It's that simple. Let's talk though to Sir Peter Soulsby, Mayor of Leicester. We were just listening to a reporter there for Seek for Truth, talking about what's going on up there. Sir Peter, thanks very much indeed for joining us. It seems a rather complex issue, this. We've just had it explained to us that one of the problems with the communities in Leicester at the moment is that there's been a bit of an influx of people coming from a particular part of India who might have accessed EU passports because they are Portuguese nationals as well. Is that the case?
Mike, I think what we've got here is things, issues being brought into Leicester that really have absolutely nothing at all to do with Leicester.
Right.
And that's a matter of frustration to me, a lot of anger to local people, and a lot of local people very baffled by what are obviously things that are important in the subcontinent of India, but really have no place in modern Leicester.
But are these things being brought in by people from the subcontinent? Because that's what we're being told. And it seems to me, and I've been visiting Leicester for many years. I once saw The Who at the Granby Halls many years ago, and stayed in the Holiday Inn. You know, it's a great city and it's always been a very ethnic city. It was then.
Yeah.
And I would say that, you know, for decades, Muslims and Hindus have lived side by side without any problems at all.
And they still do. I mean, that's the point. I mean, what we've got here is a few hundred young men, and they are all men, and they are all young for the most part, you know, who have chosen Leicester as a bit of a battleground.
Yeah.
I was really interested in some of the figures that came back from the police about the ones that they'd arrested.
Yeah.
It's not a cross-section of those involved, but it does give you an indication. And of the 18 they'd arrested, 8 came from outside of the city,
right, from
Birmingham, from Solihull, from London. And it does suggest that people, for whatever reason, you know, have chosen Leicester as a good place for a battle about issues that have got nothing whatsoever to do with Leicester. And I think the fact is, you know Leicester well, Leicester is somewhere that, of course, community relations, you know, always have tensions and so on. But, you know, we do pride ourselves on the fact that different communities do get on incredibly well, work alongside of each other, collaborate together, talk to each other in a way in Leicester that isn't the case everywhere else. And that remains the case today. You know, we've got a few hundred young lads who are making a nuisance of themselves and quite a dangerous nuisance.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, because, you know, some people who would perhaps be maybe apologists for what's happening would say, well, you know, football hooligans fight in the streets all the time in all parts of Britain. It's nothing to do with race. But this one clearly is to do with, as you said, an issue which is an issue outside of this country, an issue in India and Pakistan. And if it's true that a lot of these young men are coming to this country specifically with the idea of doing something like this, because they're coming from a place in Gujarat, I'm told, where they've got Portuguese passports, then that needs to be investigated, doesn't it?
No, they're coming from Birmingham. That's...
So you've not heard this story about sort of the Portuguese-speaking Goans, then?
Do you know one of the most evident things of this is the extent to which stories on social media have been used to feed the people's perceptions of what's happening here in Leicester. The amount of disinformation, in fact, in some cases, absolute lies that have been shown, you know, on social media, is really quite alarming. And yes, I mean, that's one of the things on social media. And the police are particularly frustrated because obviously, they've been trying to put out the facts of what has and has not been happening in Leicester.
Uh-huh.
But of course, social media, it's pretty wild out there.
No, of course. I take your point. I mean, I'm not saying any of this because of what's been on social media. I'm saying it because of somebody that we spoke to who's been looking into what supposedly is happening there. Because if eight of the 18 people arrested were from elsewhere, then 10 of them were from Leicester. And so presumably they're living in Leicester. They've been brought up there by their parents, who may be first or second generation people living there as well. So, I mean, it's not simply people from the outside, is it?
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting it was. I'm just suggesting it's been fed by social media. It's been fueled by people coming from outside as well, of course,
right, as
some young people in Leicester. But we are talking about a city of, what, 350,000, 360,000, a few hundred people, young lads out on the streets making nuisance of themselves. I'm not trying to diminish it, you know, because obviously that is something that is worrying for us. It's not good for the people who have to live in the surrounding streets, and it's not good for the reputation of the city.
But no, it's really not.
I think you have to keep it in proportion.
Well, we are keeping it in proportion. We haven't led the show with it,
which
we might have done if it was even worse than it currently is. But if you're a shopkeeper in one of these streets that we're looking at now on the screen, you must be a bit worried that somebody's going to throw a brick through your window or set fire to your car or something like that. So any kind of lawlessness of any kind is a concern because it could get worse.
Absolutely. But do you just watch that video there and just see how effectively the police were in there?
Yeah.
And now they've got enough people on the ground. And of course, you know, it took a while, I think, for them to realise just, you know, how serious this could be. But as soon as they did realise, they got the people on the ground and they have been very, very effective in stopping it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm very confident that you know, they're not going to let a few hundred lads disrupt our city and cause undoubted distress to local people and indeed damage to local business.
And if
I was just going to say, I mean, you can see there that, you know, initially, that's very few police dealing with a difficult situation.
Yeah. That's also one video. I've seen other videos, Peter, which have been taking place at night, which are a lot different, you know?
Yeah, but if you see the videos of you know, what's happened subsequent to that, you know, they're quite clearly, they were outnumbered. You know, very, very obvious now. You just got to see what's happening. And were therefore limited in what they can do. They responded very quickly to calling enough people to make sure that they're not outnumbered. Mm. And subsequently, yeah, they've done a lot of arrests, but they've also stopped any disturbances. Yeah.
But if these are very unrepresentative of, say, the Hindu and Muslim communities in Leicester, what are the community leaders of those two groups doing to stop it from continuing?
I think they're doing their very, very best to use their influence to stop it happening. But you've got to recognise that, you know, obviously we're talking about more established, older people in the communities who've lived here for a long time, who are, you know, very much committed to the very good relations that we've got in Leicester. And of course, you know, being a parent myself, you know, our ability to influence young lads in their late teens and early 20s is perhaps, you know, not as absolute as it might be.
And, what are most of these kids doing? Are they at university? Are they working? Do they have jobs? Are they unemployed? What are they doing?
I think we'll find out as the charges go through, you know, find out their backgrounds. But you know, as far as I could tell, they're a fairly normal cross section of kids of that age who have found excuses to come onto the streets and make a nuisance of themselves and have a bit of a fight.
Yeah, I mean, you say that you're confident Leicester is resilient. And it will return to normal relations very soon. How soon?
Oh, very soon. I mean, that's all I can say.
Soon,
I mean,
like, yeah, tomorrow, tonight?
I can't guarantee that what the police are doing will entirely clamp down on this. I've got enormous admiration and have taken a lot of injuries themselves. I think it was about 16, police injured. But I'm very, very confident their ability to prevent further disorder and to put necessary resources into making that happen. And I'm also very confident that the very well-established communities in Leicester are going to wish to ensure that they can do all they can to prevent any repeat of this and to ensure that any damage between communities is minimised and repaired. Mm.
Have you got any worries at all, Sir Peter, that this might get a lot worse before it gets better?
I might regret saying this, but actually I believe the police are on top of it. And, you know, I certainly believe that there's a strong commitment from those who are established in Leicester, you know, to make sure that it doesn't get any worse. You know, but of course, it's a worrying time for, you know, city. I mean, nobody likes having this sort of thing happening in their streets. And, you know, I very much hope that it will very soon pass and that we will very quickly get about the business of repairing the damage.
So Peter Soulsby, Mayor of Leicester, thank you very much indeed. We'll take calls on this coming up. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk TV.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
We are back to normal business, I suppose you might say, resuming after the period of mourning for the Queen. The funeral was yesterday, of course. Laura Dodsworth is here with me this morning. A very good afternoon to you. You're later than advertised normally because we're doing planks together.
Hooray!
Later on, which is always good news. We didn't do it last week for obvious reasons, but we've got plenty of reasons to do it this week.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to mention two names to you, Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby.
Okay, fair enough. We can talk about that later.
Yes. But you've got something more important.
Well, yeah, I think there's a very important story which didn't get the coverage it deserved last week because of the mourning for the Queen's death. But this is the death of a young woman called Mahsa Amini in Iran. Now, for me, it's incredible that, you know, which deaths get the attention and which ones don't. And I'm not really specifically talking about the Queen's death. That's understandable. It dominated the headlines. But think about, say, when George Floyd was killed in the hands of the police, how it propelled worldwide outrage, anger, a whole movement, protests, violence. But this young woman's death has had almost no media coverage. Now, this is what happened. The hijab was made mandatory in Iran in 1979. And Amini was arrested and detained because she wasn't wearing the hijab properly. This is what happens in Iran. She was supposedly taken away and beaten in the police van. Now, of course, the police are denying this, as you would expect.
She was walking around, presumably in the street.
Just walking around in the street, not properly or modestly dressed. Her improper, immodest, appalling hair must have been on site. Yeah, I'm very angry about this story. So the true details haven't really emerged, and maybe they never will. But The Guardian reported that a CT scan of her head shows bruises on the face consistent with beating, a brain hemorrhage, and damage to the skull. So it looks like she was beaten to death while in police custody. You see, what they do is they arrest women and they give them what they call re-education sessions.
Chilling word, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And so she didn't survive her re-education session. It is disgusting and morally outrageous on an epic scale. But what's worse is, you know, not only are the police not admitting it, but they released a very duplicitous video which is supposed to imply that she died of a heart attack or epilepsy or some other natural cause of death unrelated to beating.
You might as well say shot while escaping, mightn't you?
You might as well say something like that. Now, this was the branch of what they call the morality police. It's the moral security police, which is also another chilling term, isn't it? Imagine having a morality police.
Right.
The commander of the morality police has been suspended. So I think it's safe to say that infers some guilt. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done that, would they? But the police commander of Greater Tehran has assured the people of Iran that there was no resistance or argument. I mean, I bet there wasn't because she was beaten around the head. And that she was even joking in the vans. But this is the pièce de résistance, Mike. The police normally wear body cams, but they weren't that day. Just by some incredible coincidence, the police weren't wearing their body cams on the day that she was supposedly beaten to death and died in custody. And this isn't an isolated story. This has happened to other people in Iran. There was a 28-year-old woman. She was berated by somebody on public transport for being improperly dressed. And bystanders intervened and they kicked this guy off the public transport. She was then arrested and beaten and she was forced to apologise to this bystander on police. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a group of Iranian people in 2014 who did a little social media dance to Pharrell Williams' Happy.
Yeah.
And they were sentenced to prison and 91 lashes, I think.
Amazing.
Yeah, so
I remember one incident, which may be longer ago than that, where there was a demonstration of one kind or another for some students and one of them was shot dead. And at that time, there was an organisation called Press TV, which operated in this country, which an awful lot of people used to do shows and do work for, who you would otherwise thought wouldn't and shouldn't have. And I'm not going to bother naming who they are, but there were some quite influential politicians who used to go on there and would take money, and it was an Iranian state operation. And thankfully, at that point, most of them stopped. But they hadn't stopped before.
Oh, I know. I mean,
it's a horrible regime, isn't it?
It is a really, really horrible regime. I mean, I'll be honest, there is this death moved me personally more than the Queen's death. There is something so Handmaid's Tale and so sickening about this. And I don't know why it doesn't inspire the outrage and the anger of something like George Floyd's death. You know, women are beaten in re-education sessions for not covering their hair. It's just disgusting. I mean, and in a disturbing development, the Iranian government wants to now use facial recognition to enforce hijab wearing in public.
How are you going to do that?
Well,
isn't
then
it
anyone
who's counterintuitive.
Well, the hijab covers the hair.
Right.
So they'll be observing people's faces. And if they're not wearing the headscarf, It'll make arresting them easier to have all these facial recognition cameras up. I mean, facial recognition doesn't seem to be making the world any safer anywhere. No. It just seems to be giving governments the opportunity to monitor and control people. But this, I mean, this story just makes me want to say no to controlling women's bodies, no to morality police. What a terrible concept.
Yeah, whose morals, no, by the way?
No to facial recognition, no to religious laws. And, I mean, I've been following this hashtag called My Stealthy Freedom for years. This is, there has been a level of outrage and protest for a long time. It gets almost no coverage. There are protests now in Iran. And the Kurds in the protest, because Amini was a Kurd, have reported the police using water cannons and guns on them. But it gets almost no international coverage. So I really wanted to...
But is that because of the fact that it's Iran? You know, I mean, if it was happening in another country, it might get more coverage. And it might be that it's because of the perception of Iran, which is a sort of theocracy, as they call it, rather sort of benignly. It's not really. It's a dictatorship, isn't it? By sort of men in very strange robes who believe in God. It's as simple as that. And they don't believe that anybody should disagree with them. And therefore, if you do, you get punished. And so I think people, if they think that, when they hear these stories, they go, well, that's what happens in Iran.
I guess so. But, you know, for a long time, many women have been protesting this. They've been taking their headscarves off at the protests. I guess if enough women do it, there won't be enough places in the police cells. There won't be enough police to re-educate and beat them. But I think there are lessons we can draw from this that we need to apply to the UK. I think there's a way in which we've been living under de facto blasphemy laws for a long time. You know, at the extreme end, you've got the case of Salman Rushdie. Okay.
Yeah.
But you know, do you remember when Cineworld cancelled the screenings of the film Our Lady of, what was it called? Do you remember the film about the prophets?
Yes, I do.
Our Lady of Heaven.
So I can't remember what it was called, but I remember the story.
So they said they wouldn't be able to guarantee the safety of cinema goers. You know, so you've got examples of de facto blasphemy laws like that. But then also, you know, you and I disagreed about this last week. People protesting against the monarchy.
Yeah.
In the public streets of our country's cities have been arrested. You know, also you've got the police knocking on people's doors for using the wrong pronouns, compelled speech. We need to be really aware of this kind of creeping form of morality policing here in this country. Yeah. I think we should be getting rid of as many CCTV cameras as possible. And as you can prove, they've made the country safer. And I don't think they have.
No. Got a text here from somebody who doesn't give a name. We have our own morality police, but they're enforcing woke and rainbow culture rather than the version of intolerance in Iran. Same thing, different prevailing tyranny. Well, so far they haven't started killing people for it, which is the difference. But I take your point. I mean, I think the point is there are differences between those kinds of countries and their and what happens there. Same as you would say the same in Russia. You know, demonstrating in Russia is a very dangerous experience. I would have thought. You know, and demonstrating
absolutely
in China similarly. Yeah. And but you're right. I mean, we have to be careful and we have to worry about it. But I think for the purposes of not enough people knowing about it, you fix that. But people, I think, would expect it in Iran, you know?
They would. But, you know, in Iran and everywhere, people need to be given choice and they need to be given freedom and they need to take it back when it's taken away from them.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, at risk of death in some cases, you know, I mean, a lot of people would say, well, I would die for my freedom. But really, would you?
Well, if you look at the My Stealthy Freedom hashtag, which has been going for years, women take off their hijab in public and they film themselves and they post it. So they are taking enormous risks. The case of that young woman I told you about, that the example of the bystander who was kicked off public transport, that meant that she was arrested and she was beaten and forced to apologise on national TV. So, yeah, people are taking risks, but it shows the strength of feeling when hundreds of women annually are doing that in the country.
Yeah. I mean, there are still lots of people fleeing Iran as well. I mean, a lot of people that have come to this country. I had a cab driver the other day who was from Iran who had left some years ago. We know people who have still got family there whose family are literally under house arrest. You know, it's a very undemocratic, dangerous place, I'm afraid.
I know. Well, do you remember, but we do have to be careful of this kind of creeping morality. Do you remember Emma Barnett interviewed this first woman, was it the president of the Muslim Council of Britain? I think she was the president of the Muslim Council of Britain. She interviewed her last year. It was a fairly gentle journalistic interrogation, but she kept asking how many female imams there are.
Right.
Like, it's a relevant question. The answer could be none because the religion doesn't agree with it. But she asked, she wasn't getting an answer. Despite it being, I think, a fairly typical and light line of journalistic questioning, you know, one Guardian writer, Kelsa Preece, called it savage, and the video was taken down by the BBC. So there's, and in that is a kind of an implied racism,
yes,
in a way that Muslims wouldn't be able to stand up to robust questioning right. or criticism. And we really have to keep the questioning, the criticism and the debate alive. Mm.
Absolutely right. It's a bit like what's happening in Leicester at the moment, which we've been talking about this morning, which we'll talk about in a moment. Laura Dodsworth is here. We've got a great deal of other stuff to get into, including our conversation the other week about Andrew Tate. You will hear more about that. We'll take your calls as well. We are in the final hour of the show, but we've got some time in the last bit. 0344 499 1000 is the number. This is Talk TV.
On DAB+, on the app, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Happy day. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is, of course, Talk TV, the only place to be for the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, or at least a reasonably honest attempt to get at the truth, which an awful lot of people in other forms of the media don't seem to want to do. We've got Laura Dodsworth here, seeker of truth, in fact, I think I could call you.
I love it.
You're a woman after my own heart. You like to ask the right questions, but you sometimes like to also ask the wrong questions, which is not a wrong question, but it's the question that somebody doesn't want you to ask.
Fair enough.
Because there's no point in asking people questions they want to answer. The point about what we do, I think, is to ask people questions that make them feel a bit uncomfortable, make them go a bit sort of, ooh.
I'm going to take that one for my tombstone, Seeker of Truth. I like that. I was once called Slayer of Taboos. I was like, oh, I'm having that.
That's good.
I'm keeping That's Seeker a nice of Truth. One. Do you know, I was just talking about the Seeker of Truth. Mm. We're not going to say what we were just talking about, but I often think sometimes our little off-air bits where we have a gossip in between, when they interrupt our conversation with the news, God damn it.
I know.
We just have the best little chats. If you could cue them all up and play them live, I think people would love it.
Maybe one day we will.
Maybe one day. Okay, so I want to pick up on something you just mentioned at the end before we talk about Sleepy Joe and the pandemic being over. Andrew Tate. So we had a great chat about Andrew Tate the other week. Again, it's a story that the mainstream media haven't covered much.
No.
And when they have covered it, they've covered it wrong.
Mm.
Here, though, we've been seeking the truth. We gave it a different spin. Now, we talked about why he was really deplatformed. Mm. And as always, Talk TV do a little clip of the video. Mm. They put it up on Twitter, they put it on Facebook, whatever. Now, I've been looking at the analytics for this. The video on Twitter got about 5,500 views. It's kind of okay. Some people watched it, not that many. In the same programme, we also talked about compelled speech and pronouns. Now, that video had about 25,000 views. I thought, well, that's interesting. Because
yes.
I think the Andrew Tate stuff's quite spicy.
And also, the stuff that you and I do generally goes quite well.
Yeah. We don't hold back. It's normally quite spicy. And then I'd done an article about Andrew Tate, which I shared on Facebook. And Facebook loves to tell you about your analytics to try to persuade you to spend money to advertise, which I've never done. But it said that my Andrew Tate post had had 6 times fewer impressions than the normal.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Now, somebody else has taken clips of our video and put them on TikTok. In fact, there are lots of clips of our conversation going around TikTok. Right now, Mike, we are TikTok sensations. And they're in the hundreds of thousands. And one particular clip's actually had 1.1 million views.
Right.
And I tell you what I take this to mean. TikTok hasn't banned Andrew Tate hashtags or content, but Twitter and Facebook are obviously suppressing it. They're kind of holding it down. They're not giving it the true reach.
Really sinister.
But they do it all the time, and they talk about how they do it. It's in their policies. Yeah. You know, Facebook has talked about how it deliberately shadow bans content that goes against World Health Organization guidelines because it will get 95% less readership.
Right.
So they do that. They will kind of squash something if it's
but they it's make not that happen, taste. Right? So when they say it's got 95% less readership, so therefore it's not good for your brand or whatever, the reason it's got 95% less is because they're making it go nowhere.
Well, that's exactly it. They're not saying to you, that post has got 95% less viewers. They put it into their company bio, like, aren't we doing well?
Yeah.
We're reducing the reach of the stuff we don't like. So anyway, the point is there's still a massive audience for people to talk about Andrew Tate, to learn about Andrew Tate, but you won't really find it on Twitter and Facebook because I think that they might be shadow banning the content. They're holding it down. I don't feel like the reach is truly organic.
Mm. No, and that is a worry as well, because you have no control over any of that. I remember very early, I don't know if I've told you this story, but in my very early days, and I did an overnight show, and the Independent Republic was a kind of a thing. Overnight, it became a kind of a family, a community. So we had a Facebook page. Somebody offered, I had to get somebody to moderate it in the end, because people were literally talking to each other all day about the show the night before, about what was coming up the next. One day, it just suddenly disappeared. Absolutely no explanation. I'd originally started the page, so technically I was in charge of it. But they hadn't got in touch to say we're taking it down for this reason or that reason. Mm-hmm. They hadn't said that somebody had violated the rules. I'd never had an email of any kind to say that, you know, some of the things being talked about on here are in some way, you know, offensive or anything like that. And could I find anyone to talk to? No. There was no point of contact at Facebook for me to say, excuse me, why have you done this? And can we have some kind of conversation about it? Could you put it back? It just disappeared. And that was the end of that. And it never did come back.
Yeah, the problem is they're not transparent about what they do and how. And ultimately, that's quite a deterrent to people using the platforms long term. Mm. I don't think it's going to work well for them. And also, there's the whole Streisand effect. Mm. You might not be able to find your Andrew Tate content on Facebook. What are you going to do? You're going to find it in the end. That's why his Rumble videos are doing well. That's why people are still on TikTok. Anyway, I think it's funny that two Luddites like you and I don't know how to do a TikTok video. Yeah.
Well, I don't think you do. Well, I mean, when
but
I
our
saw
TikTok videos are doing very well on their own.
Well,
funny
enough, my son, who is also one who would have watched that on TikTok with Andrew Tate, occasionally tells me, you know, a Plank of the Week video did really well. There's 500,000 over here, and so he kind of monitors it and tells me. But I just think it's not for the likes of me, maybe for you. But when I saw Boris Johnson had a TikTok account, I thought, well, that is definitely not a good idea.
Well, when Boris Johnson, number 10, Nadine Dorries got TikTok accounts, I went on so I can kind of keep an eye on what they're doing. But I can't get into it. It's like, also, I really don't need another social media addiction.
No, I really don't. I tried Snapchat for about 5 minutes because a friend of mine, who's even older than me, was put in charge of quite a big publication Snapchat account. I was like, how are you doing that? You don't even know what Twitter is, you know. And I just couldn't get on with it at all. You know, shortened versions of stories in Cosmopolitan and shortened, you know, magazine articles that were melted down to sort of four paragraphs. I'm just going, nah.
Well, you know, also, how many addictions do you need? But in my case, anyway. Mm. So we're talking about keeping an eye on world leaders. Biden.
Joe Biden.
Let's talk about Sleepy Joe. So Joe Biden's been on CBS News and he said the pandemic is over.
Right.
Yes. He said,
thanks,
we still
Joe.
Have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it, but the pandemic is over. If you notice, no one's wearing masks. Everybody seems to be in pretty good shape. So I think it's changing.
So he's still wearing three, though, isn't he?
Well, he's got four shots. He was wearing two masks at one point. He's still wearing masks outside and still getting COVID. I don't know who he is to comment on anything. I'm sorry. The man is such an idiot.
I know.
So he's declared the pandemic over, but they've still got all these incredibly ridiculous, strict, nonsensible mandates. You know, young children are still wearing masks in nursery schools and schools.
Doesn't
in some
it depend
states.
On the states there, though?
Depends
because
on
the
state.
Because the states are obviously the people who have the final say, don't they?
Yeah, but there are still federal rules about COVID.
You can't fly into America if you haven't had two injections.
So they've still got the travel rules.
They don't care about the boosters, but they do care about the first two.
So Djokovic couldn't compete at the Open. It's still affecting all travelers. Yeah. The Pentagon requires all members of the military to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
They are not allowing religious exemptions. And let's not forget that all these vaccines are researched and developed using replicated cell lines from fetuses.
Yeah.
For some people, that is a matter of conscience. Yeah. They've not allowed religious exemptions. The New York Post reported that in the state of New York, I think about 2,000 Department of Education employees have lost their jobs because they haven't been vaccinated.
And a sports big problem as well, because a lot of the sports teams said, if you're not vaccinated, you're not playing. So that became a big controversy for an awful lot of like baseball players who didn't, for some reason, some of them religious, didn't want to take a vaccine. Football players as well, basketball players, you know, amazing.
Or it could be, you know, they've had COVID and they don't want the vaccine or they want long-term safety data. Whatever their reasons, this is a country that is still bullying people to be vaccinated in some states to wear masks.
Yeah.
They're still encouraging social distancing, but he has said that the pandemic is over. But wait. They have relaxed the guidelines a little because now they've dropped the 6 foot part from the social distancing.
Okay.
So you're encouraged to social distance, but not at the 6 feet, which was never scientifically determined anyway. Woo.
So what is it now? 4 feet? Three feet?
They're not recommending a particular distance. They're leaving it to you, I guess.
I mean, I just got a thing from the passport office saying, you know, please read our COVID rules. I'm like, why? Sorry? What about? I'm not going to. But anyway, there we are. Laura, thank you very much indeed. I'll see you shortly for Plank of the Week. We're filming that this afternoon in the company of Laura Dodsworth, and Will Geddes will be in. He's had a busy week as well. We'll take some calls, though, because it's very nearly... I can't believe it's already almost 1 o'clock. Ian Collins will be here to tell us what's coming up on his show. We'll take your calls and we'll do much more besides. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk TV.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.